this is a district that's recently been redistricted to become probably a lot more competitive. The addition is basically Fayetteville, the town, and that's a demographic shift from the rest of the district, which is basically kind of suburban Charlotte and rural stuff in between.
Today on the WNC Politics Podcast, a focus on North Carolina's most competitive congressional race. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Glad to have you along. North Carolina has 13 members in the U.S. House of Representatives. 10 of those seats are currently held by Republicans, just 3 by Democrats. Yes, this in a state where registered Republicans, Democrats, and unaffiliated voters are evenly divided. Across the country, congressional districts, reminder, there are 435 in all, are regularly, and at times egregiously, gerrymandered. In 2011, legislative Republicans here established new districts, which is typical. However, 3 years later, a court ruled them illegal for discriminating against black voters. So state lawmakers redid the map in 2016. And at that time, powerful state House lawmaker David Lewis uttered what is now an infamous statement in North Carolina political circles.
I propose that we draw the maps to give a partisan advantage to 10 Republicans and 3 Democrats, because I do not believe it's possible to draw a map with 11 Republicans and 2 Democrats.
Lewis's remark and the state's latest congressional districts landed in a lawsuit challenging their extreme partisanship. The suit went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. I was actually there in March of 2019 in an obstructed view seat. We'll save that story for another time.
WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tiberi attended oral arguments this morning and joins us from Washington. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Frank.
Tell us about this case. Not the first time North Carolina's been flagged for gerrymandering in the courts, but this case is a little bit different. Tell us about this one.
Racial gerrymandering has long been illegal. However, partisan gerrymandering and doing just what David Lewis said he planned to do, maximize gain for your own political party, has been in bounds for centuries. The case before the Supreme Court argued that it was time for new limits when it came to partisan redistricting. Justice Neil Gorsuch had a series of questions for the arguing attorneys that morning. The late Ruth Bader Ginsburg chimed in as well. But in June of last year, the High Court punted on the issue of partisan gerrymandering, ruling in a 5-4 decision that federal courts lacked the justiciability. It effectively sent any similar partisan challenges to state courts for years, if not decades, to come. The legal wrangling then returned home. First, dozens of General Assembly state legislative districts were challenged at a trial, and in an unprecedented ruling, they were struck down for being overly partisan. Then, last October,
a panel of 3 state judges has blocked North Carolina's congressional maps from being used in the 2020 elections. The judges ruled the districts were drawn with extreme partisan bias.
That's my colleague Will Michaels. So almost a year ago, state lawmakers quickly went to work and approved 13 new congressional districts. And that 10-3 Republican advantage was now expected to yield an 8-5 Republican to Democrat divide. The second district was pushed entirely into Wake County, and the 6th was recrafted to include more of Greensboro and Winston-Salem. Just a few weeks from now, those blue constituencies are likely to send Deborah Ross and Kathy Manning, respectively, to Congress. Also reconstructed last fall was the largely rural 8th district. It runs from Cabarrus County, a quickly growing, mostly suburban area east of Charlotte, through the Sandhills to Fayetteville. That's North Carolina's 6th largest city. The district also includes Fort Bragg. For the first time in 28 years, Fayetteville was left whole, entirely within one congressional district, not split or cracked into different boundaries. And that's important, as the city is more than 40% black, a very reliable cohort of Democratic voters.
And we have a district that overall probably still leans Republican.
Dr. Chris Cronin teaches political science at Methodist University.
This should not be the most surprising election for a Republican to win. On the other hand, as you and probably most people know, we live in an era of elections where it's not so much about finding the people in the middle and trying to get them to show up and vote. It's about, can you get your people to show up and vote? And so in that sense, it's going to be kind of interesting to track how energized is Fayetteville as a collection of voters to counteract, you know, the more typical suburban and rural votes that this district has always kind of represented.
Now, at first, the 8th District didn't receive a ton of attention, perhaps because it doesn't include the Triangle or Charlotte proper. But then, on a second or maybe third pass, national groups seemed to find an appetite to run a serious race here. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, insiders call that the D-Trip or D-Triple-C, circled the 8th as a possible pickup. Money flowed in, and the left began to strategize about how to knock off the incumbent, Republican Richard Hudson. He's a four-term incumbent, firmly conservative, and considered popular.
This kind of critique of policy, you know, I think that can resonate. Critique of him and his voting record, I think that's going to fall on kind of polarized ears.
Hudson's opponent is Democrat Patricia Timmons Goodson. She's a former state Supreme Court Associate Justice and was the first Black woman to serve on that bench. In 2016, President Barack Obama nominated her for a vacancy on the federal bench, but Timmons Goodson never got a hearing, blocked by Mitch McConnell and Republicans in the U.S. Senate.
And it is worth mentioning that these are both really strong representative candidates that are going to appeal to a lot of people, you know, across the aisle in terms of who they are as individual candidates. That's often true, but that's not always true. Like, this is a fairly well-liked incumbent, and the challenger is really well-loved in the community as well. So that's just an interesting race. And so it'll be something to watch to see if the strategy tries to go too negative, because though we know negative advertising works, you know, generally, this doesn't really seem like one of those races where that's gonna mean much.
So far, the campaigns in this race have remained mostly positive. Now, early last week, I spoke to Congressman Hudson's camp, laid out the plan for the podcast, and was told that it all sounded good. They'd be back in touch with some times for an interview. But late Friday, that changed. I'm not sure why, and the congressman was no longer available. Well, the invitation stands. I was able to connect with Timmons Goodson via Zoom last week. Here's our chat.
I'm running for Congress in the 8th Congressional District because I believe that the citizens of this district deserve somebody that's going to fight for them. The bottom line is they deserve better representation than they've been getting.
This is a more favorable district to a Democrat. That's because a court blocked the current district from being used in the 2020 election. So we had, as our listeners will probably remember, congressional redistricting last fall. And this constituency is one that you have a deep connection to. You've lived in Fayetteville for more than 30 years. But the congressman here, Congressman Richard Hudson, is, by many accounts, he's a popular congressman. He has done some good things for the district. I've heard people on the left and the right tell me that. Tell me why voters are better served with you than they are with the incumbent.
I believe that he is out of touch with our district. I believe that he's failed to stand up for the citizens of this district in the ways that they need to be. I'm talking about looking at the COVID. You know, this is a middle to lower middle class district. Healthcare is important. And far too many of our citizens are without accessible, affordable healthcare. And in the best of times, that would be problematic. But with the pandemic here, I think it's downright sinful. And so he is not representing the people of the 8th Congressional District when he continues to stand with those that are seeking to abolish and get rid of the Affordable Care Act. He is not standing with the people of the district and representing their interest when he fails to call for the expansion of Medicaid.
So the district that's redrawn here, it's parts of seven counties, if I've got it right, and please jump in at any point. If I don't have it right, it has parts or all of Cabarrus, Stanley, Montgomery, Moore, Lee, Harnett, and Cumberland County. Cumberland is more than 40% of the district. Cumberland has a significant African-American black population, and that's going to be a key influencer in what happens here in the final few weeks into early voting, and then, of course, as we get a result here in this race. But as we think about the district having transformed, it is the first time that Fayetteville has been whole in a congressional district in nearly 30 years, which is a long time for a decent-sized city. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, what's the biggest improvement about this constituency? Obviously, it's more favorable for you to run, but what functionally, so kind of functionally speaking, what's the biggest or best improvement about this new district?
Well, you look at Cumberland representing 41 to 43% of the district population. You look at the fact that 25% of the district is brand new to the incumbent. And so what that means is he's out having to introduce himself to one-fourth of the district, just like I am. So in some respects, it's almost like an open seat. I look further to the western parts of the district. You know, we're talking about a good bit of demographic diversity. Many folks are coming to Cabarrus County, for example, and we're talking a younger, more educated, more progressive demographic. Lots of college-educated women. Groups that tend to vote with the Democrats.
If elected to the next Congress, what's the first piece of legislation that you will file?
I will be filing and taking action that will increase the likelihood that health care will be accessible and affordable to the folks in the 8th Congressional District and around the country.
So just to push a little bit, is that Medicaid expansion? Is that a new healthcare proposal? Is that something specific to COVID-related care and costs? What exactly are you talking about when you say?
Well, you know, when we talk about Medicaid expansion, you know that North Carolina is one of six states left that don't have not expanded it. But I don't know, perhaps there's something that the federal government can do to further sweeten the pot to enhance and encourage states that have not come on board with it to help their citizens. You know, work more to making sure that costs in connection with testing and, you know, treatment of the virus, that folks are going to be able to handle the expense in connection with it.
The other major story that's happened this year that is still playing out, of course, in our country, in addition to the coronavirus and the response and everything that's going on with the pandemic, is the racial reckoning. George Floyd was born in Fayetteville. I think some people around here know that, but perhaps it's not all that well known. George Floyd was born in Fayetteville. There was a memorial service for him in Hoke County, in Rayford, earlier this year, back in June. And we've had this tumultuous time in the weeks and months that have followed. There's been talk of defunding the police. There's been talk of systemic racism. And there's this, obviously this rich and nuanced conversation going on. But I'm wondering from you if you will give me one reform that you would either propose or support as we think about law enforcement in this country, one reform that you would propose or support if you were elected to the U.S. House?
Well, I'm going to cite to you the George Floyd Act that was passed by the House of Representatives, has not been dealt with by the Senate. There are many reforms in there that I would strongly support. I'll highlight one for you. You know, one of the problems that we have is that when we identify a law enforcement officer that has brought discredit not only upon himself, but on his fellow police officers, at this point, there is no repository or place where we can look to see if an officer that we're looking at hiring that's been involved in police work, whether there have been any issues or problems with them. You know, if a doctor or a lawyer has problems and has violated any code of ethics or has been reprimanded, there's a source that we can go to and find that. But where law enforcement is concerned, there is no such place. And so that is a reform that I absolutely would stand up for, and I believe would be worthy of some of my primary efforts.
In 2016, you were nominated to a federal judicial vacancy. You never got a hearing. This was effectively the Obama lame duck period. This is the when Justice Scalia passed. Did you know at the time that your nomination effectively had no chance?
No. What I understood was that it would be a challenge.
In a word, what was the lesson, or what was the experience like?
I'll have to say that I was disappointed. I've worked hard all of my life. I've played by the rules. The American Bar Association found me unanimously well qualified. I thought that I had earned a right at least to have a confirmation hearing and to have a vote up or down. And so it was disappointing, but I have not let that stop me. As my father said, some folks will do things to take your attention away from what's important. So I use that toe stomping to motivate me to continue to try to serve my community. And in part, that's what this run for Congress is.
You joined Twitter last December. You had, I think, avoided the, I call it an addictive cesspool. You had avoided it until 9 months ago. Give me a letter grade on Twitter, your experience with it, A through F. How do you like Twitter?
B minus.
You have a birthday this week. Our podcast, it'll be last week by the time this this podcast comes out, but you're celebrating a birthday here in mid-September. How are you celebrating?
Working on my campaign.
Patricia Timmons Goodson is a retired North Carolina Supreme Court Justice, and she is the Democratic nominee in the 8th Congressional Contest. Early voting begins in just a couple of weeks. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
She's on Twitter at Timmons Goodson. Find the incumbent at Rep. Rich Hudson. I'm at J_TIBS. A final congressional footnote, North Carolina has a notable, if not quite as competitive district in the mountains. Mark Meadows served that region for several terms, but earlier this year, he resigned to serve as White House Chief of Staff. The race to replace him is between Republican Madison Cawthorn and Democrat Mo Davis. Another debate takes place between those two next Wednesday. All right, that should do it. We're getting closer. Mail-in ballots moving each day. Early voting commences in just a few weeks. Next week on the Political Podcast, we shift gears to focus on the state Senate. Do Democrats really have a chance at taking back a simple majority? Find out then. This episode was produced by the talented Charlie Shelton Ormond. For him, Professor Chris Cronin, and Patricia Timmons Goodson, my name is Jeff Tiberi. Thanks for listening to the WUNC Politics Podcast.